Good morning. It is Monday. This is the Morning Shift on Sports Radio 92.9 The Game. We are live here in the Kia Studios. Mike, Bo, and Tiff hanging out here with you on a post-Sunday Falcons victory over the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. Good morning, guys.
Morning, Tiff.
Greetings. Salutations. Dylan, what's up?
What it do, Tiff?
You know.
I got a quick question for you. How's that new Peloton treating you?
It's good.
Been good?
Yes.
How many times have you rode it thus far already?
I got it before I went out of town.
Oh, so you haven't had
probably it. I haven't really had a chance. Yeah. So this week will be my more of my chance to dabble in, but I have done it at least twice.
Okay. So but this is the week you're really getting it in. Legs are going
to
be churning.
We're going to try.
I love it.
We're going to try to get it in before the show.
I love it.
Punch me in the face. No, I'm just kidding. All right. How you guys doing?
Good.
I'm great.
Enjoying the victory. I had a good Sunday watching them Falcons get that dub, man. That was a big, big one to get off the back.
Well, it's huge, and you played a team that had, you know, that's a really good team. That's a playoff team last year. That's
three straight division,
because they didn't win a division the year they won the Super Bowl. Actually, New Orleans won the division that year. And look, three straight times they've won the division. They've got I don't give a damn who they're missing. They weren't missing a lot of their players on defense. They weren't missing the three-headed monster at running back. And
had all five linemen.
And
healthy.
Yeah. And did you see that? At times they had three running backs in there. I'm sitting there and I'm looking, I'm scanning because, you know, it's really hard with a team like that. Because they have Rashad White and Bucky Irvin, and those guys share the running back. And 1-7 is hard to distinguish at times across the football field. And I look up and I go, I'm like, 1-7? 44! I'm like pointing like, Wes, all three guys. And they ran that like a little kind of like option type play.
Yeah.
I mean, they came out with their head on fire. They really did. They came out to play, and you got punched in the mouth on the road.
I was going to say, what was you guys' panic level after the first two drives seeing them run the football? Because mine was on like 9. I was like, dude, this ain't good. This ain't good.
I'm just sitting here, and I'm like, were we not ready? Did we not think? Like, if I knew that they were going to come out and run the ball.
I did too.
Then I know Jimmy Lake.
You and I tweeted back and forth about it. It was like, dude, you know they're going to come out and run it, but I don't know that we have the horses to stop it. We'll see what happens.
If I know that Cade Otton is the guy you got to stop, then I know that they knew that Cade Otton was the guy you got to stop. But you got to give them credit. They had a game plan, and they came out, and I say Tampa, and they punched you square in the mouth.
Yeah, they did, man.
And good teams. Did you hear me? Good teams, they respond. And that's what they did. Jesse Bates responded on, the second or third play of the game? Punches it out, you get the touchdown, then they go right back down the field. They end up getting up 14-7 on you.
Did I not call him the biggest free agency acquisition? I feel like it's creeping towards, I don't want to say ever, but.
Of Terry Fontenot's.
Yeah.
Yeah. And you can say Kirk Cousins could be at some point.
Yes.
But. Tiffany, it's easy to nail.
Partial to defense.
It's easy to nail a quarterback, right? It's easy to go sign a guy who's had success everywhere he's been in the NFL at quarterback. It's not so easy to go when you haven't had a pass rush in so many years, still don't, and you say, hey, I'm going to sign this safety to a huge contract, and all he's going to do is be
Make
the biggest
plays.
Impact player on defense.
Yeah.
Yeah, you're absolutely right with that. And I mean, I think he has been worth. I don't think they paid him enough.
Yeah. Look, man, he's definitely been an impact player the last couple of years, no doubt about it, getting those turnovers. Kirk Cousins, impact signee as well. Do not sleep on a guy that has quickly become one of my favorite players for this team, Darnell Mooney, another impact signee as a free agent wide receiver. Man, it felt like he was all over the place yesterday. The speed is completely different than anybody else brings to the table on this offense, man. So just I don't even know how to, if we were doing One Word Wednesday, I don't even know how I'd kind of circle this victory. It's gritty, but efficient, and you caused them to do things differently than they wanted to at times, which was nice. I mean, I had questions going throughout the end of the first half of why they're not running the ball anymore. I know Arch did in the booth as well, but nonetheless, man, it was a a solid win. I think it looks a little better if Youngway makes the kick at the end, but what would that have been? You know, we wouldn't have had as many heart attacks as we have throughout the year if things like that were to happen. So,
this hour brought to you by Morgan & Morgan. Injured, call Morgan & Morgan or hire Morgan & Morgan, America's largest injury law firm.
How about the, he's 31 to 17. You get the interception by AJ. Phenomenal play, by the way. That was a ball hawking type play.
Yes, it was.
By a player that has been questioned because, you know, he went like almost 2 years on interception. So you get that, right? Then Algier fumbles the safety. They score the touchdown. It's 31-26. You get the ball back with 6:52. And you go on a drive that has a huge penalty in the middle of it. And you burn 5 minutes and I believe 51 seconds off the clock. And it gives them no time. I know Youngway misses the kick. Youngway makes the kick. I mean, I'm not saying you're walking up 18, tipping your cap at the crowd.
Right, yeah,
but
yeah.
I'm telling
you, a lot
you,
more comfortable.
It's a hell of a lot smoother of a walk. You don't have to make that putt with a little bit of pressure on you.
Especially after what happened yesterday in the Commanders and Bears game. You see how that one can go south in a hurry. So,
yeah,
Youngway would have made a lot more people at ease if he would have knocked that one through. But to your point, man, incredible drive. Mentioned it a minute ago, Charlie Warner on a catch. It might have been was that his second catch of the year, Charlie Warner? Might have been his first.
I'll tell you this. It's his fifth catch in 25 games.
Okay, yeah.
Well, what Wes dropped.
That tells the story. And then you get the scramble that you and I talked about on Friday with Rob, the fair foul. Was anybody else register a carry on the game other than Bijan and Algier?
Scramble.
I know.
It was like, I'm not going to do it. I'm not going to do it.
Here I go. Watch me go. I love it, Kirk. And then the quarterback sneak. First quarterback sneak of Kirk Cousins' Falcons tenure. So, yeah, man. A couple of left hooks right there. Nice to end the game. It was a beautiful drive.
Dylan, whenever you get a chance, it's not this segment, but you're going to have to pull up his pregame speech, Kirk Cousins' pregame speech. I don't know if you guys saw this. Did you guys see
it? I didn't see his. I saw Jameis Winston's, which was intriguing to say the least.
You need to watch Kirk Cousins' pregame speech, but hopefully we'll get that for you because it's good. And the comment section is probably even better. But with that win now, so the Falcons moved to 5-3 overall. They are 4-0 against the NFC South. So they've taken control of the division now.
Yeah, and you own the tiebreaker completely against the what many have perceived as the best roster in the division, which is Tampa Bay. And I know that they're short. Godwin, Evans is going to come back. I don't care. That's like I said, it's a team that still has weapons. You saw what Kate Otten is one of the better tight ends in the league. They've got a backfield that can run. They've got players all over the defense. You had to go down there and win a game with a team. That team needed that game more than you, and they knew it. And you had a fort. You took control of the game. You know, you tried to do what every one of you out there in your cars has been whining and complaining about. Let me finish.
Every one of you out in your cars, don't be talking down to our listeners like
that. Let me finish. So no.
We have the wake-up call today, right? People can call in?
No, man up Monday, sorry, y'all.
You can tee off on both.
Let me finish. Is that they wanted Algier to have the ball in his hands in situations like he did. And the mistake, I think, I don't really 100% blame Algier, because I do believe that the penetration, immediate penetration allowed it to be the botched handoff. But whatever it was, they were doing what we all asked them to do. To put the ball in Algier's hands when you need tough yards, you need to grind the game away. You need to salt it away, right? That's what everybody in the car has wanted. And it was a turning point almost for Tampa Bay. But you were able to overcome that. These games are so hard to win.
On the road.
Go ask Baltimore how easy it is to win on the road when a team's down superstars.
Baltimore had the game yesterday that we had last week. Just sleepwalking.
They traded their best receiver, Mike, and they lost their starting quarterback. Cleveland did. And they won on the road. They won at home against a division rival.
Mm. More on the Falcons' victory, guys. What about Kyle Pitts? Big game.
There was a couple times I wanted to yell at him. Let's just put it that way. But, yeah, big game.
Touchdowns can erase some things, right? No, maybe.
As long as you get across the plane. Well, not when you almost erase them yourself.
We'll be right back here on the Morning Shift on Sports Radio 92.9 The Game.
We fight with respect.
We fight with respect.
We fight no cap.
We fight no cap.
We walk in your trap, take over your trap.
We walk in your trap, take over your trap.
We fight with respect.
We fight with respect.
We fight no cap.
We fight no cap.
We walk in your trap, take over your trap.
We walk in your trap, take over your trap.
We walk in your trap, take over your trap.
That was Kirk Cousins' pregame talk with the teams before they went out there and beat the Buccaneers to take control of the NFC South. They won 31-26, but I would say I should just call him Kirko because he is full Atlanta now, according to his pregame speech.
I mean,
walk into your trap, take over your trap.
Here we go.
He is.
Attaboy.
He's something. He really is. He cracks me up because it's I mean, I know I remember being covering this team for all of Matt Ryan's career, and a lot of people tried to make fun of Matt Ryan at times, and Kirk just takes it to a different level.
Really does.
I mean,
you swag and surf.
He accepts it.
Well, yeah. It's the full embrace. But see,
there's a wholesomeness to it. That's what you like about it. He makes walk into your trap, take over your trap, feel wholesome.
It's 100% who he is, though.
I know. It's genuine.
Yeah.
They didn't know how to respond when he first started. They're like, what?
You heard me.
We run fast? What? Okay.
Oh, let me tell you something. I wish, for his sake, I wish we could play Tampa Bay every week because – I was sitting there with Arch Tiff, and we were waiting. We were actually waiting for Kirk, and I was like, "Hey, I want to look up his numbers real quick." And I want to in week one, or not week one, but week five, when you the first time the Thursday night game you played Tampa, and I started. Then I had to do math, which made it last a lot longer than I wanted it to.
Yeah, no thanks.
But in two games against Tampa Bay with the Falcons. Now this is not counting the fact that he's had a lot of success in his career against Tampa Bay, but just with the Falcons, he's 65 of 87 for 785 yards, completing 74.7% of his passes with 8 touchdowns and a pick. That is just in two games against Tampa Bay.
He's been special, man.
A blitz happy team. Who does a phenomenal job of disguising it. And they do a phenomenal job of disguising it of where they're coming from when they do it.
Yeah.
He's been, a couple of passes short of flawless, honestly.
Yeah. I got to tell you, man, watching this game yesterday, both of these quarterbacks at times, specifically the second quarter, a little bit of the third quarter, that's before Baker started turning the ball over. And shout out to A.J. Terrell and Jesse Bates. But there was a point where both of them were surgical, right? At the same time, almost. And Baker, you looked up, and I think we talked about it in the postgame. I think at one point, Baker was like 13 of 14, and they're running the ball down your throat. They get like, 60 yards in the first quarter on that on the first couple of drives they're able to put together. So there was great quarterback play throughout this. And obviously, Kirk, has been at another level facing Tampa Bay this year. But I think that when you look at what Kirk is able to do against this team, he kind of relishes getting the blitzes from Todd Bowles, doesn't he? Like, he looks at it. He can read the defense. You see so many times that he yesterday get through his reads, third, fourth, fifth minute. He mentioned Bijan on the touchdown, the receiving touchdown to Bijan, that he was the fifth option as far as that goes. And I think that's awesome that he's able to get through his reads. And shout out to the O-line and Caleb McGarry for being able to get him there.
He used the word special before. Here's Coach Reem Morris on Kirk Cousins Day.
We went and got him for that zone replay run today when he scrambled up the middle. Did a great job. He got a sneak today. I mean, I'm fired up, man, what he's able to do. He's a processor. He's smart. He knows situational ball. He keeps us in the right frame of mind, and that's what he's supposed to do.
Well, when he sat at his press conference as he had, I don't want to say accepted the job, but when he first took the job, he mentioned multiple times elite processor, elite processor, elite processor, had the quarterback position. Because of Todd Bowles.
Mm.
Because Todd Bowles' defense, they're so phenomenal with showing you pressure, but you don't know where it's coming from. They do a good job of pulling this guy and then bringing this guy. They did it on a third down play early in the game. I believe it was 3rd and 8, and it might have been 7-7 or 14-7, Tampa, and you're on their side of the field. And basically the right side, they brought guys from one guy on the left side and would be the B gap, and the other side on the edge, and you just can't pick up everybody. You get confused on who's dropping, who's coming. Bijan did a good job of stepping up in the B gap one, but the edge guy came.
Right.
And you didn't know it. And that's what Kirk does. He's able to process it, get out quickly. He made one of the best throws. He made the best throw I've ever seen him make as a Falcon quarterback on that drive to put the field goal at the end of the first half,
yep.
where he loops it over the Mike, correct me if I'm wrong, but it was man coverage underneath with safety help up top, and they basically had Darnell bracketed, but he dropped it over Izzy's head.
Yeah, it looked like maybe a cover two look. Not really sure. I had to go back and look at it, but you're right. Heck of a throw, and is able to hit it right before Darnell goes out of bounds, and just that's what he's known for, man. He was doing that all day yesterday at times, and you mentioned Raheem. Got on there and mentioned him using his legs too, which I thought was awesome to see. I got to be honest with you.
Yeah, Kyle Pitts, let's switch gears because I brought him up before the break, and I guess you guys had a lot to say about, crossing the goal line.
Well, I love the way he started. You know, you start the game on the fourth down, right? And Kyle is able to get through a hold, and because they tried to hold him on the play, and it was an easy throw for Kirk, and he walks in the end zone easily. The other one where – Mike, I want you to get to what you saw about the breakdown. There was some odd stuff in the formation and maybe the route concepts in the play. But it's a hell of a throw by Kirk because Kyle is in the middle of – it looked like a Top Gun scene.
Yeah.
where there's one friendly and all these bogeys around Kyle. And he's able to catch the ball.
I was like, where are you going with this?
And fight. But go back and yeah. you guys are at home. Go back and watch the play.
They're all converging right there in the middle.
Yeah, it's like he's zigging and they're all zagging. And he's able to break through. And he breaks a tackle at one point in the play. And he got lackadaisical with how he crossed.
Lackadaisical is the word.
Attaboy.
With the way he crossed the goal line, right? Because I think a lot of people say, well, he got lazy. I don't think he got lazy. I think he got comfortable. I think he thought he had done the work.
Can be one and the same, but yeah.
And
sometimes comfort leads to laziness, right? When you don't
you get got. That's how you get got in this
league. I'll be honest. The same thing, and I'm pretty sure it was the same exact spot on the field, happened last year with Antoine Winfield and Desmond Ridder.
No, it was the other side.
Was it the other side? From where I was looking on the film, I thought, okay, that's the exact same thing that happened to Desmond Ridder last year, and it was the exact same player on defense for Tampa. And that's, speaking of which, that's one of the things we haven't even brought up yet, is the fact that Antoine Winfield was on the field with Kalijah Kancey, and a lot of their parts they did not have last time were back for this one, and you still had a great day offensively for Kirk Cousins, right?
Yeah.
You didn't have the 500 yards passing, but you still had some pretty quality players that were plugged in. But I'm with it. Inside that Kyle Pitts, the throw in the middle of the field, and he finds a seam and obviously stiff arms a guy. I'm trying to focus on that, but at the same time, when I look at what Kyle Pitts did around the goal line, I'm so frustrated. But you mentioned the motion before. They bring Darnell Mooney in motion in the backfield, snap the ball before he gets to Jake Matthews, and he inserts into the line of scrimmage. Now, nothing ended up happening off of it, but I was watching that thinking, okay, maybe that'll pop up either later in this game or later in the year at some point where Mooney is in motion, inserts into the line of scrimmage on pass protection, and then goes out in the flat to the right. So just special all the way around. Both passing plays at Kyle Pitts. I don't want to overlook the fact that the first one was a fourth down, right? It was a fourth down play where you're like, oh, man, I wonder if they convert. This Raheem Moore is trying to make a statement. And then they hit Tampa Bay deep over the top to Kyle Pitts, and he scores the long touchdown on that one and did not, get risky with the ball crossing the goal line.
But, Tiffany, to your point, since Kyle was shut out against New Orleans on the 29th of September, a month ago, 21 catches, two touchdowns, and maybe 400, somewhere around 300 something yards because he's had an 88, a 70, a 65, and a 91. So, I think Kyle Pitts is awoken from
whatever. Kirk Cousins being here.
Well, and I think that's I really go back and you look at his best performances in his career has been with Matt Ryan and Kirk Cousins. And it's not just the on-the-field stuff. It is, I think, the leadership that those guys can bring off the field, over there on the sideline. Hey, man, what are you doing? You got to run that route this way. Like, get it, you know, not being afraid to motivate a guy different way, because we all need different types of motivation.
Speaking of which, the leadership, there was a moment, Wes mentioned it on the broadcast, I'm sure you saw it too since you were in the booth with those guys, that there was a moment that Raheem sits down next to Kyle Pitts on the bench after that whole snafu at the goal line, and it sounds like they had a conversation. I don't know if you got a chance to witness it, but Wes mentioned the fact that it looked a little animated down there as far as the conversation Raheem was having with Kyle Pitts, and I think that's huge.
Well, this is where your old friend Jerry Gray, Tiff, yes, is so instrumental right, as the assistant head coach.
Yeah.
He also works with the DBs. But Ra was hot on the sideline.
As he should have been.
Jerry Gray has a moment with Ra. And then Raheem goes over and he sits down on the bench, and Kyle's sitting over there by himself. And there was a conversation. And, you know, if I don't read lips, I'm terrible. I can't read Dylan's lips when he tries to mouth something to me on this other side of the glass. But I can tell you it was animated, but not as animated as people probably thought, because he did calm down when he got over there. But it was exactly what I think Kyle Pitts needed when he talked to Arch in the post game. He's like,
learned a lesson.
Learned a lesson, right through. And Arch is like, that's great, but what happened on the actual play? Like, before you got there, I mean, everything else, because that's what bugs me so much, is we're all going to talk about the play at the goal line, but not the catch he makes in traffic and breaks a tackle.
I wasn't the one that brought up the play at the goal line.
Well, that's the problem, though. It has to be talked about.
You can't compartmentalize that
one part, so that's why I was making the joke off of it.
Yeah, you can't compartmentalize. I mean, Kyle Pitt, everything kind of fits under one umbrella, so it was frustrating. But nonetheless, he did have a good day yesterday. Continues to get a larger part of the target shares, too, which we'll touch on throughout today's show.
When we come back, we'll get you a check on college football, some movement in the AP Top 25, who's joined the ranks? We'll discuss on the other side on the morning shift on Sports Radio 92.9 The Game. Well, let's get to the AP Top 25 poll, because maybe there weren't as many surprises over the weekend when it came to college football games. But the top 10, there's been some shakeups now. And there's also been a new addition to the Top 25. Oregon's at 1, Georgia at 2, Penn State at 3, Ohio State at 4, 5 is Miami, 6 is Texas, 7 is Tennessee. But guys, I want to point out here before we get to Notre Dame, BYU at 10 is Texas A&M. So they have climbed up in the ranks.
Yeah.
They look tough to beat right now.
Texas A&M in the driver's seat in the SEC, and with a quarterback controversy on their hands. Like, it's just crazy. That's how gritty that team is. They had two quarterbacks, had to put in a backup, and they're still in the driver's seat. And I don't know all the tie-breaking scenarios, guys, but when you look at the possibility, right, that, you know, if Georgia were to stumble, and I'm not saying they will, but if they were to, the fact that you could look at a Texas A&M matchup on Thanksgiving weekend with the conference in its crosshairs and everything to gain, and then it's possible that it could happen again. Just, I mean, I don't know all the tiebreakers, but it's a possibility, and it's crazy. It was crazy to watch that game this weekend.
Well, it was a tale of two halves, really. I mean, LSU did a phenomenal job defensively of getting after Connor Wegman and keeping him from doing anything. And he was constantly moving. And Marcel Reed is a guy that I know a little bit about, mainly because I got to watch him beat the brakes off my favorite team early in the year when Wegman was injured.
Yeah.
And then he doesn't play. Wegman comes back, and he plays pretty good against Missouri. It was okay last week, and then this week he was brutal. Reed comes in, and you got to give Mike Elko credit.
Yeah.
Making a switch.
I think it was a touchdown on his first play, if I'm not mistaken. Kind of a red zone opportunity there.
They got
there.
The turnover.
Yeah, it was a turnover, coming off a turnover.
And they immediately went to business, and he left him in, and he just He was phenomenal. He only threw the ball twice, but two for two for 70 yards. But with his feet, he was phenomenal. The running game got going. They were able to – that basically with him just under center or behind center, they kept LSU's defense completely off balance.
Do you think Marcel Reed's their starting quarterback from here on out, or do you think it's Wegman's job?
That's going to be one of those – that's tough to answer because you play South Carolina – this weekend, and I think you maybe go with Wegman at first if you don't do a rotating system because you've won with both guys. But Marcel Reed is the future. There's no doubt about that.
I love it.
So Vanderbilt, they played a close game against Texas in Nashville. They lost 27-24. So Vanderbilt now drops out of the top 25, and I don't agree with that.
Yeah, I find it ridiculous that Vanderbilt squeaks in the top 25 at 5-2. They lose by 3 points to the number five team, and they find their way back out. It just I've said it to you guys a number of times before, and I've talked to Bama fans about this Tom Bloom face. Vanderbilt's a good team. Like, I know they lost to Georgia State. I know it. We've covered it. It was just down the street. But it's still a really good football team, a dangerous football team. Nashville, never thought I'd say it. Nashville's a tough place to go in right now, right? And I think that they showed some grit in this game. Weren't able to get it done. Quinn Ewers getting back on track just a little bit. But, man, they're just a gritty team that does things the right way, and you got to love watching Vanderbilt play right now.
I've always thought that it's been a harder place to win than people give it credit for. But now it feels a different – and it's in a different way. I mean, this team has played – Vatek beat them. They played Missouri on the road.
Should've
when Missouri was healthy, should have beat them. They beat Alabama. They beat Kentucky.
Like, you barely escape Texas, then you drop out of the poll. It just doesn't.
Yeah, I don't like that.
Texas barely escapes you, is what I should have said.
I mean, Illinois gets boat raced. And on the road, and they're still in the top 25.
It's my lock of the week, by the way.
And Vanderbilt is not. I'm happy for the Colorado fans out there because Deion has got them in the top 25 now.
And they're bowl eligible now. They beat Cincinnati.
He's rolling. That was a good game.
Do you believe them now?
Believe what? They're a good team.
I believe they are beating the teams in front of them, and I believe that that's all you can do is control what you can control. And I give Deion a ton of credit for that because, I think they had one or two wins when he took over 2 years ago. So he's overhauled the roster. He's clearly built something where they believe in, and that's what matters.
Yeah, I agree with you, and it's a mentality for that team right now, and they're playing with a little bit of a swagger. Now, I hate the way he overhauled the roster. Don't get me wrong. I've been on record about that numerous times. I don't like the way he went about his business, but you have to give him credit for the focus that it feels like his team has been able to somehow capture. After a couple of rocky moments in the early parts of the season, they're off to the races, man, and they're beating good football teams.
And Travis Hunter's healthy.
Yeah, Travis Hunter's healthy. He's going to get every shot to probably go out and win the Heisman Trophy. So they're a lot of fun to watch right now. He deserves a ton of credit.
Back here with our team in the city, I could not get that out. Georgia Tech, this is an ugly loss to Va Tech, 21-6.
You're just so limited offensively without Haynes King.
You really are.
Jamal Haynes played as well as he could. I think he got banged up at one point. I do believe he came back in. Forgive me, Tech fans. I watched the first quarter from home, listened to the next quarter and a half on Sirius. I actually listened to Va Tech's. Guys, you know how Sirius will do.
Yeah.
Dude, they're hilarious. Bill Roth, they were talking about
stuff.
They've got a Vitek's got a linebacker, I think it is, that speaks French.
Nice.
Tiff. And and they were talking about it, and they were going back and forth about what language they speak in Belgium. and it was hilarious. And I'm like, can you get back to the game? And it was hilarious. This guy. And I'm a big fan of local play-by-play guys, obviously. Yeah. But it was cracking me up. But anyways.
That is funny.
Back to the point, Tim. I apologize for the rant or getting off topic. But it's hard. Va Tech's a pretty good team. And it's hard to win a game without Haynes King. Pyron played. He didn't play great. Let's just be honest. He ended up putting in, is it Philo, I believe, who is the future. But it was a little too little too late. So
let me ask you this before, because I know we're headed to break soon. Would you like to take a parting shot at FSU since you are a Gators fan? Because they fell to Miami 36-14.
Yeah, I'm highly irritated for two reasons with FSU and their fans. For one, the place I always like to go in Tampa called American Social was packed out with FSU fans and a Halloween party because they wanted to watch their team get look like a doormat to Miami. And the other thing was, you couldn't score a few more points and get the over? Just a few more points.
You got to man up in a little bit. I do a tip before we go into a break. Man. Number 12, Notre Dame played. Number 24, Navy. Boat race, Navy. Navy comes up short in that one. They looked not very good. And shout out to Notre Dame for getting it done. Also, Bama, number 15, Bama against 21, Mizzou, 34-0. They went back to business over in Tuscaloosa. Oh. So a couple top 25 games definitely to keep our eyes on.
And Navy, by the way, dropped out of the AP Top 25. When we come back, Kirk Cousins lighting it up in Tampa. A monster day, four TDs. We'll get more from the quarterback when we come back here on the Morning Shift on Sports Radio 92.9 The Game. This hour brought to you by Morgan & Morgan. Injured, hire Morgan & Morgan, America's largest injury law firm.
Victory Monday!
We're in our 7 o'clock hour. It is brought to you by Zero Res. Smart, lasting, clean. Well, the Atlanta Falcons have control of the NFC South. They are perfect 4-0 against their division rivals. And they just beat the Buccaneers, if you didn't know. 31-26 yesterday, with Kirk Cousins having a monster game, 276 yards and four touchdowns. That the Falcons roll on.
Yeah, awesome game from top to bottom yesterday. Like we've mentioned a number of times, the defense at times in the first quarter, the run defense was a little bit shaky. Baker Mayfield kind of playing off of that, surgical with the way he was in the passing game. But there was just a number of plays, man. There was ups and downs, as there is in every NFL game, specifically division games, specifically road games. And yet there were times that we mentioned earlier, the four-minute drive, you put your foot down. How about one of the things we haven't talked about yet, how about the tackle from Kadarius Hodge on the fake punt? I don't know if you guys noticed that.
Yeah, I noticed it right in front of me.
Dude, that was awesome. Like, they like, you know, you see those fake punts in the fourth quarter, and so many times that they'll work out for the team, just snap it right to the up bag, get around the lip. Like, Kadarius Hodge was having no part of it, man. He sniffed that thing out from the word go.
It's his first tackle for a loss as an NFL player.
Boom.
I mean,
boom.
He did, because, you know, he's the gunner. He's over there, and I say he's not their gunner, but he's over there lined up on the gunner, right? So that's his. He's over there, and that just phenomenal, unbelievable. The fact that he got in there and diagnosed it and knifed through to make the tackle.
Yeah,
that's twice that Kadarius Hodge against Tampa Bay has made game altering plays.
Yeah, and that's why you see his teammates love him, right? Gotta love it.
Wasn't he someone that Kirk Cousins wanted here?
No, Kadarius was already here.
Yeah.
I'm sorry, I'm thinking of Darnell.
Yeah, that was who by the way.
Hi, Darnell.
Who, by the way, thank you for setting me up. You know what Darnell Mooney has done in two games against Tampa Bay?
No, tell me.
14 catches, 197 yards, and three touchdowns.
You, man.
Is that good?
Free agents, yes, hats off to our offensive and defensive captains, but Darnell Mooney is I'm telling you, he's one of my favorite players on the team to watch because he's just so different, man. He's so different than anything we've had. What was the one stat category, guys, that I yelled for all offseason? He is the guy that brings that. Beating teams over the top and getting the yak, the yards after the catch, man. He is that dude with his athleticism and his speed.
My math is I don't have exact numbers.
Okay.
But looking at going into the game, you now have two receivers, your one and your two receiver, with over 500 yards receiving through eight games. And Kyle Pitts is a little over 400. You have guys, two of which are on track for 1,000-yard years in receivers, and you have another one, and, you know, Bijan he's a little under 300. Bijan had another 100-yard all-purpose day. And every time he touched the ball yesterday, he got almost 5.5 yards a touch.
I got to give you credit for something. I know we're going to hear from Kirk Cousins, but I asked you and Rob on Friday. I think 27.5 was Kirk's over-under this year for touchdown passes. He was at 10 before this weekend. I think you didn't say four. You said three, but still, I was like, oh, wow, yeah, you're really feeling like a good day from him through the air.
Yeah.
I was like, all right, cool.
Yeah, told you, Kirko was going to eat. No cap.
Why'd you have to do that? Why?
Because it goes with Kirk Cousins.
Walk into your trap, take over your trap.
Boom!
Well, Kirk Cousins, as he always does, caught up with Dave Archer, analyst for the Falcons Radio Network. This interview is brought to you by Margaritaville at Lanier Islands, an easy one-hour drive from Atlanta.
Kirk, I don't know what it is about these two teams, but it's been fun, these two games. I don't know, is it fun on your part to be any part of these things?
Well, it's certainly stressful, but it's fun to move the football. It's fun to score points. It's fun to make big plays and see teammates make big plays. And our defense stepped up again and again. Special teams made plays. So another great team win, and we can build on it.
Tell me about protection today, because that seemed to be the operative word. They thought they did a really good job of keeping you clean for the most part. The one play that sticks out in my mind was down close in the red zone close, and you swiveled all the way back and fouled Bijan in the left flat.
Yeah, I think getting through progressions, you can't do it if you don't have protection. The touchdown to Kyle to start the game was my third option or more in the progression, and the same with the touchdown to Bijan. I mean, he's the fifth guy. And so to get through the progression, it says a lot about our offensive line.
It's fun to see a quarterback in the zone, and you've been in the zone against a number of teams. But, again, it seemed like you fell into a very comfort zone for yourself. Walk me through the throw to Mooney for the touchdown.
Yeah, great route by Mooney. We had talked during the week of the different angles that throw could be, depending on how they defend it. And he ran right where I wanted him to. Again, the pocket enabled me to kind of see it as I wanted to see it, and then I just put it to the spot I wanted to put it in. He went and ran and made the play, but the separation he creates at the top of the route, great job.
Looked like you did a little something with Antoine Winfield there, too, and he's an excellent safety. You get great respect for him. Like you froze him in the middle.
Yeah, he was, the formation, he kind of had reason to push the other way, and I just wanted to make sure that he was going to do that. But I think he's playing the rules of his coverage correctly, and ultimately Mooney made a really nice play.
How difficult is it to be patient and drop the ball off? I guess it's easy when you got guys like Bijan Robinson, you're dropping the ball.
Yeah, there was a time in the 2 minute at the end of the half where I check it down to him, and he's matched. It's really a dead play. But I throw it to him because my thought is, first of all, I don't want to take a sack. But second of all, he may make something happen. And he did. And he got us 10 yards up the sideline. So I'm going to keep giving it to him, even in tough looks. And he tends to prove me right.
When there's 6:52 left on the clock, I don't necessarily think you're looking at the clock. But you guys bled it all the way down to a minute. Walk us through kind of bleeding the clock, but yet still having to get first down.
Yeah, it certainly, the main focus is like breaking the huddle. Let's try to bleed some clock between plays. But once you snap the ball, you got to play football and get what you can. And ran the football well, had a few passes mixed in there. And Charlie got the drive started with a great flat, catching the flat and then turned up field. So that was a big drive.
All right, last thing for you. What does it mean to you about this team responding? Last week, not the effort you guys were looking for. Tell me, or not the effort, but not necessarily the results you were looking for.
Yeah, it was tough. It was tough coming back from last week. And we kind of, messaged the team this week was, hey, guys, we got to respond. We got to pick ourselves back up off the mat. And, it's a good football team, Tampa. I think they're a playoff caliber team. And it was a great response. And now we kind of build from here.
Thanks, Kirk. Appreciate it.
Thanks,
that.
Arch.
Yeah, playoff caliber team. They knocked off their division rival. And again, 4-0 in the NFC South. So they control it right now.
It's a team you split with last year. You went down there last year and won, and they came up here and ran the ball down your throats in your own home in a game that you needed, and they beat you. And
they were not a good running team.
No, not last year. They are this year.
Or one of the year before.
This year they are absolutely one of the.
Yes.
This year they're probably the most balanced offense in football. That is why I kept telling everyone, and I kept hearing people say, oh, they don't have Evans and Godwin, it's an easy win. I'm like, guys, they are good up front at running the ball. They have good running back. Bucky Irvin is a badass. Just going to go ahead and say it. I don't like saying that about guys that play on other teams. I can say it again about Mike Evans and Baker and Godwin, Kate Otten. Now they got
so
another one in Bucky Irvin.
You are saying it about guys.
Yeah, because those are, yeah, because I got respect for him. I just don't like saying
Bucky's,
it.
Bucky's he's a lot like Bijan, to be honest with you.
He's
the
physical,
way he plays,
man.
The game. Yep, I agree.
Can we talk about that that touchdown from Bijan?
Yeah. What about it?
He's getting to the end zone.
Yeah, I was frustrated.
I think it was Izian. It might have been Izian. I can't remember who it was. And he's like, full speed. And Bijan's like, oh, I can either collide with you or let you walk by me. And then I'm going to just step out.
I didn't like it, dude.
Here's the problem.
I didn't like it.
You didn't like it because you treated it like the Kyle Pitts play.
It
but
was.
Bijan, no, it was different. Because Bijan never put the ball in risk. Never.
He stopped. Before the ball crossed the plane.
Yes. But
just get the ball in the end zone.
The ball was secured.
Yeah.
He's like, oh, I'll let you go by. No problem.
I just think, given what happened with Kyle Pitts earlier today, I would have just preferred that Bijan got the ball across the plane.
Had he put the ball.
I get it. It was like a cool look, and it was an interesting little play. But, dude, I don't need the whole stop thing, let the guy go by and kind of look like a poster thing. I just get the freaking ball in the end zone. It's football.
Ball security is what matters to me.
Make contact, man.
Speaking of that, can we talk about the secondary real quick, Tiff?
It's like you read my mind, but take it away.
Jesse Bates gets tested on a flea flicker.
Plays it underneath.
Punches the ball out. Jesse was our Solomon Brothers play of the game, by the way.
Ding.
But the play that really I really enjoyed seeing was AJ's. Because he has gotten a knack in this city as a guy that doesn't know how to ball hawk, that he can't make plays. And I think, obviously it's easy to say he had one of his better games without Godwin or Evans on the field, but he played really, you didn't hear anything from his side of the field. In fact, they tested Mike Hughes all day long. They I don't even know if they hardly went at AJ, and they really didn't go. It really wasn't necessarily his issue when he makes the interception, but that was a heck of a play.
Yeah, it was. You love seeing. First of all, Jesse Bates coming underneath the flea flicker, like you said, man, he's going back. He's catching the ball like he's Larry Fitzgerald, falling onto his back. Just unbelievable for him to come down with that ball. Honestly, the catch, it reminded me of the play a few weeks back when Darnell Mooney caught the ball that Kirk was like, I didn't know if I should have thrown it. It was probably a bad throw. Like falling back on your back, making a crazy circus.
Climbing the ladder.
But to your point, A.J. Terrell obviously laying out for that one, man. And look, he does have a bad rap, it seems like. I don't know if we value him enough as a player in the secondary. But when you watch him, I think he's played with an extra level of physicality this year. And I think that he's obviously he's getting his hands on footballs right now to the point that he's getting a couple turnovers in 3 weeks. I think it's huge.
Came into the season with 4 interceptions in his career. Got 2 already this year.
Let's get it.
All right.
Let's get it.
So y'all know.
We will stick with the NFL on the other side. A Hail Mary really kind of stole the headlines on the day, and National Tight End Day. The position comes up big. That's next when we go in the huddle on the morning shift on Sports Radio 92.9 The Game.
London will go in motion to the left. Snap to Cousins. Tampa brings 4. Kirk from the pocket. Loops for Pitts. Caught. 10-5. Touchdown Atlanta. There's a flag on the play. Kyle Pitts is in the end zone, and we'll see if it stands, and it will.
That was Wes Durham, Dave Archer on the call for your Falcons games right here on 92.9 The Game. And yesterday was National Tight Ends Day. So that was them on the call for Kyle Pitts, who had 4 catches, 91 yards, and 2 touchdowns in Atlanta's win over Tampa Bay. But it was a monster day for tight ends around the league. And you had George Kittle, 6 catches, 128 yards, and 1 touchdown as the 49ers came back to beat the Cowboys on Sunday Night Football. Gosh, the list goes on here with even Kay Otten, the opposition, be it 9 catches, 81 yards, 2 touchdowns for the Buccaneers. I know you have a lot to say about him.
I like Kay Otten. I think he's got a traditional tight end, Mike, that is physical. And by the way,
ding.
I just wanted to make you say ding.
Okay.
Tiff, not to get off the Kyle Pitts. Kyle Pitts had a block in a screen that was less than ideal, but he did a really good job in pass pro at times yesterday, where they put him one on one to pass block out on the edge, and I thought he did a really good job. Kyle Pitts has played more physical in the last 4 or 5 weeks than at any point in his career to me.
Yeah,
and look, I won't run through everybody's numbers, but yeah, Trey McBride with a big day, Travis Kelce a big day, Adam Trautman for the Broncos, like. Tucker Kraft, Patriot, it's just Packers, excuse me. But if you had a tight end on your fantasy football team, then congratulations to you.
Or you're like me and Bo, we played 2, played Kate Otten and Travis Kelce. Shout out to us for running the score up on the opposition this week.
You guess what? I celebrated National Tight End Day with playing Kyle Pitts in my other league.
There you go.
There you go.
I think it's a good point you bring up about Kyle Pitts, too. They put him up to bat a number of times. You could tell that early in the game, they didn't want to leave Vita Vea one-on-one with any of the interior guys, Ryan Neuzel being one of those. So you saw some slide protection, and what that does is that puts a guy like Kyle Pitts and Bijan on a defensive end. I thought they stepped up to the plate, and I'm with you. I think he's playing a grittier brand of football. So shout out to him on National Tight Ends Day.
Also, David Njoku, I'd be remiss if I didn't talk about him because the Browns, no Deshaun Watson, they come out, have the upset probably of the day, and they knock off the Ravens behind Jameis Winston as their starting quarterback.
So you're telling me that you can go play a division rival on the road, being a team that's pretty good, and lose when they're missing, you know, the guy that was the number one receiver start the year because they've traded him, and the starting quarterback? Huh, tell me more. I guess games aren't so easy to win in the division on the road in the NFL, huh?
Yeah, they're not. And the Ravens, to me, when you look at this effort, and we talked all week, right, about the stadium last week being flat, the team kind of having, you know, a flat attitude it felt like towards the game last week. I thought the Ravens looked kind of the same way. They looked less inspirited. We also, all right, talk about rest deficit. Talked about with Tampa Bay and the buildup after that Monday Night Football game. The Ravens looked very much like a team coming off a rest deficit. And the Browns, look, man, they're gritty. Jameis Winston's going to get those guys, you know, at least playing emotionally. There's no doubt about that with some of the speeches he gives. So you like the effort he put out there yesterday, 27-41, 334 yards, three TDs. Derrick Henry held under 100 rushing yards. So just not the result you expected out of that one, but it was a fun game.
Indeed it was. And then, of course, we had Sunday Night Football going on with Dallas and the 49ers, and San Francisco won that 30-24.
Yeah.
It's not looking good in Dallas. There's a lot of eruptions, too. I don't know if you saw that with Diggs and a reporter after the game. There's always a lot.
He dropped the D's on the reporter at the end.
Tweeted during the game, and I guess Diggs was made aware of it after the game and decided to confront said reporter.
I wonder what the tweet. Does anybody know what the tweet said?
I tried to find it. I could not find it.
I thought maybe it was there was a couple questions about what he was doing as far as, you know, how hard he was playing the weeks before. I don't know if it was during yesterday, but I did see a couple of the weeks leading up to that about, you know, videos of him on the field where the play might be going away from him, him not giving max effort, things like that. So I can only imagine, but that's not a team that's in a good spot right now. I think that every football player in the NFL has probably been where Trayvon Diggs has been, where you're just so frustrated with everything, and then it gets piled on by, you know, by a tweet or a video. But nonetheless, it's not a good look, man, not a good look.
So I believe it's Mike Leslie that tweeted it, and it's the play where Kittle run National Tight End Day almost scores a touchdown, and Diggs, he's just kind of in the play, but he's not really making a real effort to get right in on the tackle, and he's right just kind of running with the play. And this Mike Leslie is the reporter out of Dallas, and he just says, "What is Trayvon Diggs doing on this play?"
Oh, that was. I thought he had tried to dissect it more because when Diggs was jawing off back at him, he was basically saying, "You don't know anything about the game of football." So, but I didn't know that that's all the tweet said.
That's all that I have seen. Now, this guy tweets a lot during the game.
Okay.
Yeah, that's all I can see that he says is, "What is Trayvon Diggs doing on this play?"
Well, clearly emotions are running high in Dallas. Let's just get a check then. Oh, go ahead.
Well, I was just going to say, you know, players don't like it when you question their effort. And that's probably where it really rubbed him.
Yep.
And that's why you have to be careful when you're in the media. If you're questioning someone's effort, you might want to go in that locker room and show up so you can face the music, because that is, to me, that is one of those deals where guys that cover teams from afar but never walk in the locker room and want to challenge from afar guys' efforts, that's really easy to do when you're not in the locker room. So I give Mike Leslie credit for actually being there.
Well, and here's what else I'll say. Trayvon Diggs is a guy who, what was it, torn ACL a year ago? And that's one of those things that's got to be frustrating for him. I hate the thought that he's making business decisions, but there are times. Look, it's like a quarterback sliding sometimes. I'm not saying that that's the conversation that's been had, but sometimes it's like, dude, you know, be choosy about what you're doing out on the field. And it sounds like that's kind of what he is. I haven't seen the play you're talking about or the tweet, and I'll have to go back and look at it. But I'm sure that there's a little bit of that in the back of his mind.
Before we move on to Anthony Richardson and the Colts, just a quick check on the NFC South with the Saints taking on the Chargers. That was a rout. Chargers win 26-8, and then Carolina falls to Denver 28-8. to 14. Yeah,
might be getting to that Saint score in Man Up. Man Up Monday. Yeah. That was not a good look for me. I apologize.
Mm-hmm.
That was a bad one.
Well, I don't know why you would ever put any faith in those people.
I'm manning up. That's what I'm doing right now.
I can't wait to get the man up on that.
Yeah, well, 30 minutes from now.
I normally enjoy the Panthers losing and the Saints losing. I enjoyed the Saints. Didn't enjoy the Panthers because, you know, Sean Payton was involved on the other side.
Okay.
Plus we got to play. Hey, look, we got
to
play them.
J.C.
Yes,
Horn.
I know, but let me get
road.
Into this next J.C. thing Horn with the Colts the same way and you did. Houston. Houston beats Indianapolis 23-20, and Anthony Richardson, things got interesting. He had to check himself out of the game.
Wow.
And here's why.
Man, tired. I ain't gonna lie. That was a lot of running right there that I did, and I don't think I was gonna be able to go that next play. So this whole thing, I just needed a break right there.
I've never heard a quarterback
need a
ever.
Break.
I've never seen Lamar Jackson or Michael Vick, and I'm talking about guys that run a lot in plays. Say, hey, you know what?
Man, tired. I ain't
I'm
gonna lie.
Tired. I'm gonna need a breather.
It's compounded by the fact,
and that's
that
why
he's 10 of 32. 10 of 32.
Well, they almost won the game.
Oh, my goodness,
man. What is Houston doing where they almost won the game?
My question is, what does that say about your culture, your locker room culture, when your starting quarterback checks himself out? Can you imagine? Do we have video of the look on the head coach's face when he comes to the sideline and said, need a breather? I mean, like, I've coached at a high school level and have heard that, but never imagined in a million years you might heard that from somebody in the NFL, man. That's crazy. But you're right. They almost won the game yesterday doing some of the crazy things that they were doing offensively. So who knows?
I mean, can you imagine back in the day? Like, can you imagine if let's just go back to Chicago in 1985. If Jim McMahon, who could move around a little bit, not a lot, but just a little bit earlier in his career, ran like sideline to sideline on a play, and then looked at Mike Ditka and was like, "Hey, I need a breather.
Tap the helmet.
I had about 12 head butt heavies last night. I need a breather."
The closest I ever saw to that in a Falcons uniform, and God bless him, Michael Turner had like 6 runs in a row, and the last one was like a 40-yarder, and he gets taken out of bounds down inside the red zone, and you could tell he kind of sat on his butt and set up with his legs kind of in a V formation, and kind of just sat there for a second, put his hands on his hips, and I think they ended up putting Jason Snelling in because everybody's looking at him going, "This dude is spent
now." You remember? So we were on the plane. I know this is way off topic. We got to go. We were on the plane and we were watching one of the college games, and they did the little shovel pad, the interior shovel pass.
Yeah.
And one of our team docs goes, "Hey, that's a Jason Snelling play."
Jason Snelling.
I did like the head because they were like over to my left. I was like,
such
"Man, I ain't
play.
Heard that name in forever."
Such a good play.
I miss that play too.
Oh man,
you think
so
we can
good.
Mix that in with Algier?
Don't even get me started. It would require a pulling guard. So no.
All right, here we go.
Yeah.
Monday Night Football tonight is the Giants and the Steelers. We did not forget about a really big play that went down in the NFL yesterday. And, yes, we're talking about a Hail Mary. That is still to come, as well as Atlanta United. But we do have a Mic'd Up.
Yeah, we're going to get to that Jaden Daniels Hail Mary in Mic'd Up. Be fun to talk about, man. We'll relive all the madness that was that play yesterday. Coming up on the other side of Sports Radio, 92.9 The Game.
This hour brought to you by Zero Res, smart, lasting, clean. We are back here on the morning shift. Dylan. I can't with you.
I don't even know what to say.
I don't even know what to say to you right now.
Why am I the only one that's out?
I had to.
What is this?
It's just a funny song. This is the artist Sexy Red, and this is her song with Drake.
No.
She's a rapper. She's one of the up and coming female rappers.
She's a rapper.
Yeah.
Yes.
And the intro to this song is just funny.
I'm not going to say my favorite song is of hers, so I'm just going to keep it moving.
Now I have a guess, but I'll let you live.
You'll let me live another day. Okay. On to Atlanta United, you guys. Were you guys enthralled by this matchup over the weekend?
Well, I hate the way it ended. I mean, it's so they don't make it easy for these wild card, so to speak, teams, you know, teams that play, what is it? Is it 8-9 or 7-8? 7-8, right? And then, you know, you play on Saturday of decision day. Then Atlanta has a fly to Montreal.
Go ahead.
Then come back home. Then turn around and fly again to Miami and play the you know, only the one seed. And so just to make that game, to me, to be in that game the entire time like they were was a feat in itself.
Yeah, I had a lot of pride in the way Atlanta United played. Actually, Mike Conte tweeted about this after the game. Atlanta United, 7-day stretch, they flew over 4,200 miles and played three road matches, all of which went down to the final minute, which if you've watched all these, you know, do-or-die games, I mean, how exhausted these guys are at the end of it. And then, obviously, to go on the road and play a team like Miami, who is the best team in MLS. And, look, it's frustrating to watch. They score in the second minute, and you're like, oh, here we go. Luis Suarez scores in the second minute. You're like, here we go. Brad Guzan, friend of the show, Brad Guzan, continues to play exceptionally well. Actually, Ed Messi at one point kind of one-on-one gets a nice – nice takeaway there. And it just, look, you're going to look at all the numbers and you're going to see that Atlanta United in a lot of ways probably shouldn't have been in this game, but they were. And I think it goes back to how gritty they played. They had a couple guys go down with injury. And a lot of guys step up to the plate. Saba continues to create chances for himself. He's been one of the better additions to Atlanta United in a long time. And say what you want about this team. A lot of different faces than were here 3 or 4 months ago, but man, they play hard, and they're fun to root for at this point. So you'll be pulling for them big time next Saturday night for sure.
So they lose 2-1 in this matchup, but again, this is a best out of three series. So they will come back here to Mercedes-Benz Stadium,
and you get it. You get an 8 days of rest.
I think Mike can give me some tickets to that.
I don't know why you need to go to Mike. He could look at me, maybe ask me. You know, I can know some people too.
Oh, you got as much pull for United as Mike does?
I don't have as much, but I do know some people. Know some people in the building. You know, I'm not.
Okay.
November 2nd, so you don't have much time to work with.
4 days.
So,
yeah. 4 days.
Is that enough?
It's a pretty big ask.
Yeah. My Halloween present? Me and the wife.
Halloween present?
Yeah, Halloween present. My kids think they get a Halloween present.
Hell, that's your Christmas birthday for the next 3 years if I get you tickets to that game.
Hey, I got a present for you. Let's go, Mike. And what a day it was yesterday in the NFL. Obviously, three of us glued to the Atlanta Falcons' massive victory, command of the NFC South at this point, and a lot of fun to watch yesterday. But one of the other games that was going on was this culmination of last year's draft, a coronation, if you will, of maybe who the best rookie quarterback is. You saw Caleb Williams and Jaden Daniels face off. Caleb Williams, not great, but neither was Jaden Daniels for the most part. All right, a couple good runs, had the rib injury, was questionable all week, gives it a go. Actually gets hit a couple of times in that flak jacket that he was wearing yesterday. Showed grittiness. All right, comes down to the end, and this is what it sounded like.
Comes down to one last play, and it's going to be getting longer by the second. You're all the way back at the 30-yard line. Now you can step into it. Here comes the Hail Mary with the game on the line, and the ball is caught! Caught! It's a miracle! It's Noah Brown! Oh, my goodness! This town is going crazy! It's a madhouse in Landover, Maryland.
He did it.
Woo! God, you got to love NFL football. You got to love Jaden Daniels running around in the backfield, uncorking about a 60-yarder through the air. You also got, I don't know if you guys saw this, you got, is it Tyreek Stevenson, the DB for Chicago, who is talking crap to the fans.
What a ball
is being snapped. And
you know what the craziest part about that, though, is? He's the only guy that put a hand on the ball for Chicago.
I know, but then it gets tipped. But he did tweet out an apology, taking ownership of it.
I've
but
got it right
my
here.
My issue wasn't just with that, but also with your line. They stopped chasing after Daniels, too. And I know he is extending the play. You're probably a little bit gassed, but I saw two dudes trotting up there when you probably should have been maybe bringing the heat a little bit more in that situation. You can't think the game's over when it's not actually over.
Yeah. You're absolutely right. But hell of a throw the ball 65 yards in the air.
With the rib injury.
Yeah, I'm telling you, that is tough. That is toughness.
Tyreek Stevenson tweets, to Chicago and my teammates, my apologies for lack of awareness and focus. The game ain't over until zeros hit the clock. Can't take anything for granted. Notes taken. Improvement will happen. Hashtag bear down. And he is getting shredded.
That is going to be one of those plays that, well, it's going to be an awful probably week for him in the meeting room. But then not only that, that's something like I could see a youth football coach showing their players, a college coach.
Oh, there's no doubt.
Showing their players. It's a bad way to be made an example of.
Keith Armstrong was always so good at that. He had a good, bad, and the ugly from the week before, and he would always special team situations, but every now and then.
What position you play? Yeah. No, Julio Jones play wide receiver.
You play L3. Sit your butt down. You play L3. Love that guy. You got to look at the numbers. Caleb Williams, 10 of 24. Now, they're not Anthony Richardson bad, but not great. 131 yards passing. 10 of 24. Jaden Daniels, 21 of 38 for 326 yards passing, also running around for 52 yards rushing. I've said this before on the show, and we've talked back and forth about Jaden Daniels and Caleb Williams and Rookie of the Year and everything else. I still feel like Caleb Williams, up until yesterday, had been getting better every week. Now, obviously, you take a step back. Commander's a good defense. Obviously, we know Dan Quinn does a good job defensively. But right now, it does feel like that Jaden Daniels, as far as winning Rookie of the Year honors, is kind of running away with that at the quarterback position. So hats off to Jaden Daniels, and what an enjoyable game yesterday, man. Love to see it.
I know both franchises have been bad for quite some time, but I feel like the one in D.C.'s had the worst end of it.
You're right.
I'm not saying you have to factor that into making someone Rookie of the Year, but if you look at the turnaround that they've had, season's not over yet.
I think you're so right.
I would
so right.
Probably lean towards Daniels.
Remember, Chicago's made the playoffs three or four times in the last 10 years.
Yeah.
Washington, I think, made it. The last time they made
they were close to making it.
I think they made it Eberflus's first year, or the year before he got there.
You're talking about D.C.?
No, I'm talking about Chicago.
Oh, Chicago, okay.
Washington's been out for a while. Give Dan Quinn some credit, too, for the culture change. Now,
ownership has
something to do with that. The new ownership group has a lot to do with that. Don't get me wrong. But they brought Dan Quinn in as their guy to change the culture in that locker room.
And that's what he does.
And he is done. By the way, Mike, two tickets?
Ding.
Two tickets?
Yeah, two.
You're done.
My man.
I got one of the top dogs has already hit me up in the organization.
Whoever the top dog is, you're my man.
Look at Big Tom Tom showing Mac, off the pole.
I'd like to give me credit because I talked trash
Tim knows
to him.
Who he is.
And I think it sparked.
Put it in the gear.
It sparked that person to reach out.
Shout out to my guy, whoever the top dog is.
You're welcome.
Let's go see.
That's what I do.
Vamos. Vamos ATL. Vamos.
I can't take much credit.
Let's go. Let's go. My guy.
Will you be gloating in the next segment? That's the big question.
I've got one to gloat about.
Woo!
So that's all that matters.
I got one great one and one that I would love to delete forever.
I'm going
to
go ahead and give you the teaser. I didn't lose anybody any money. If they went with all my picks.
All right, man.
Which means
up
you didn't make any either.
Is next on the Morning Shift on Sports Radio 92.9 The Game. We're in our 8 o'clock hour. It is brought to you by Mark Spain Real Estate. Go to markspain.com to get a guaranteed offer on your home today and start packing.
Can I ask a question?
Sure.
Victory Monday.
Isn't that a question? Asking if you could ask a question?
I'm excited. I think we're all excited. We're 5-3, 4-0 in the division.
What place to win?
Swept Tampa Bay. First place, baby.
There it is.
And then after what I just pulled off in the matter of 2 minutes.
Oh, my gosh.
Do I have to do the bad of man up? Because, I mean.
Whoa.
I just hooked Mike up with two. This man looked me in the face. Look me in the face, Tiffany. In the face.
I also questioned you. It doesn't matter what.
He looked you in your eye socket.
He goes, you think Mike Conti can hook me up with tickets? Like, I have never been anywhere near the organization.
Don't act like Conti's a nobody.
He's not. He's the man. We all know that. He's my boss, your boss.
Yeah.
He's the voice of Atlanta United.
Yeah.
But you look me in the face and had the audacity to, you basically,
questioning your manhood? Is that what he did?
Yeah.
Tiff, was it disrespectful that I brought up Conti before I did Bo? And in Atlanta United circles?
No.
Okay, that's
absolutely
my point.
Absolutely not. No.
Yeah.
Disrespectful.
Either way.
No. Dylan, disrespectful.
I do appreciate it. And shout out to the ticket hookup. Whatever direction that's coming from, man. That's huge.
Yeah.
My wife's going to be stoked.
TZ's a man.
Yeah. There you go.
All right. Now I guess we can man up now, Tiff.
You didn't appreciate that, did you?
Boy, disrespect.
You didn't like that, did you?
Disrespect all over the place, Tiff. Mike disrespects me. Dylan, you know what? I'm thankful for you today. Because you ain't disrespected me.
I'm not at full strength.
I was
going to
say, we're only 2/3 of the way through the show. Don't give her credit yet.
give me a minute. Let's kick in.
Give her a minute to find something. She'll latch on something.
I had something actually to say right then, but because you said that, I backed off. I backed off. I was going to say, maybe it's just your face, and it just looks like, you know.
Well, that's all of us.
You might just bring on yourself.
We call Day-Day in one of these rooms, so I got a little bit of love somewhere.
Bo, I will. Before y'all man up, I will man up and say I do have to add in Mike saying he was wrong into the intro, and that'll happen for next. Yeah. It'll be there from next.
Must have happened last week.
But. Yeah, I've had to say that more times than I like. The wrong was definitely after the Georgia Texas game, though.
Well, real quick, I'll tell you someone that I'm going to man up real quick outside of the cuts. I'm very critical of the owner in Charlotte that owns their soccer team and their football team.
Yeah,
and I need to man up and say that he did a hell of a thing this weekend. They had a charity concert with Luke Combs and Eric Church.
Eric Church, yeah.
They raised, I think it was $24 million in total.
Wow.
Every dollar from that concert went to the Helene Assistance of what North Carolina's going through.
I believe Marty Smith hosted that, too.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Tiff, he gave them the venue for free. He gave them the concessions for free. He basically took a huge hit. And there was no operating costs whatsoever for that concert, and all of the money raised went to that Helene assistance.
So that's big.
I just want to man him and say, you know what? I've called him out a lot of times the way he handles his organization, but that was a hell of a job, David Tepper.
I completely agree, man. Nice job. Way to go.
All right, now you got to man up. So I don't want to man up twice in a row.
All right, do we want to go good or bad first?
Well, you should go bad because you've been bad so far.
All right. Dylan, my bad was actually going to be, and I listen, it's out of character, but I went out and I went on a limb. I said the Saints are getting back healthy. 7.5-point underdogs to the Denver Broncos. I was like, Spencer Rattler's still playing quarterback, but I think these guys getting back almost to full strength, they should be able to cover that. The Saints this weekend, and I hate to do this, the Saints are 7.5-point underdogs against the Chargers. Actually, I think it's kind of gone down to 7, so I'll stick with the 7. You talk about rest deficit, and you got to look at this one, I think, Rob. The Saints, coming off the Thursday night, they get a little mini bye week. It looks like Cesar Ruiz, Chris Olave, a number of their other players will be able to at least surround Spencer Rattler and give him a little bit of something this week. I think the Saints, with the mini bye, a little bit healthier, plus the 7 points, I think that's a much tighter game. I like the Saints this weekend for my NFL lock.
Yeah, just pain. It was pain everywhere.
That ain't it, man. Obviously, they get the doors beat off of them.
By the Chargers.
Yeah, by the Chargers.
26-8, I think.
Yeah,
that
was not good.
What I love is that not only you were wrong, but you were wrong by picking the Saints.
Yeah, I know. I know. What a bad deal.
Oh, it's so good.
Right. Well, there's my mea culpa right there.
And you know
Sorry
what?
About that. I was wrong.
You know what's equally as bad?
Yeah.
The college version of the Saints for me. I thought could have enough of an impact in the contest.
Woo!
Or at least that would just be so dreadful that Miami just hung 50 on them.
Right.
But they were somewhere between bad and terrible,
yeah,
but not so terrible.
Do you want to just
mediocrity?
Go ahead and get to it.
I thought Florida State and Miami would go over the
There's
over.
Your disrespect you've been waiting on from Tiff. So.
I mean, you're like pleading. You're kind of pleading your case.
I had to pull it out of her.
You're tap dancing around what's about to happen.
Because I just thought that I would get more, but Dylan, just play the tape.
Thank you.
Miami and Florida State. Ooh. FSU is coming down to the Hard Rock. The over is 54.5. I'm going to tell you something. One thing Miami does is score points. You know what else they do?
Hmm.
They let the other guys
give
up points. The last 5 results, 62-0, 50-15, 38-34, 39-38, and 52-45. That's Miami's last 5. You know what Florida State can't do? They can't score. But Miami's going to score for them. Get the over in 54.5.
They're going to score for them.
I think Miami drops a 50 burger on Florida State this week.
Psych! That's the wrong number!
I think that's worse than me picking the Saints.
Mike
you
Norvell's,
picking a 1-6 Florida State Seminoles is worse than me picking the Saints.
I didn't pick them to cover. I just picked the over to be over 54.5, and Mike Norvell's incompetence knows no bounds.
Whenever someone says, let me tell you something, they're about to be wrong. Just keep that in mind.
Let me tell you. Let me ask you something. All right, can we flip and actually kind of pat ourselves on the back?
I want to take a shot so bad right now.
Just do it.
But
do
I'm not. Play nice. People have been nice to me this morning. I'll be nice to other people.
We both went 2-2 this weekend, right? You went 2-2?
Right.
We both went 2-2 this weekend. So I will play one of my goods, and I'll be honest. I'm going to be honest with you.
Okay.
Really? Because I love it when you're honest with me. I was trying to point to her.
I'm going to be honest with you.
Tell me the truth.
The games that I have had the good, I have nailed for the last few weeks. And Texas A&M and LSU, well, yeah, Dylan, this one was no different. I'm going A&M as well, and LSU fans don't tweet us and say, you never gave us a chance. Right? It just is what it is, man. I think Texas A&M, is built better.
Just against the world, man.
Yeah, look, Texas A&M is built grittier, and I think LSU is going to come up. They're going to load the box. They're going to force Connor Wegman to do some things through the air. But even when they've done that, when LSU's done that, it hasn't really worked out for them all the time. I think that there's a lot of positive things going on with LSU. I just don't think they are built for games like this against gritty, blue-collar, A-gap teams like Texas A&M. Texas A&M has had their hiccups. Don't get me wrong. But I just think when it comes down to it, Connor Wegman makes somebody miss, maybe even in the running game, and A&M is able to squeak this one out. But I do think it's going to be a barn burner, man. And I think that that atmosphere just might be the edge for me, right?
We were more trained. We were more together, and we found a way. Yeah. Let's get a grind on two, right? And then let's have some fun. Let's go! 1-2! Turn the
Now, granted, I swung and missed on it being Wegman's legs, but Marcel Reed, that was plenty enough, right? And then you get the A&M atmosphere, the grittier team. Also, it wasn't in that clip, but I said Garrett Nussmeier is like last year's Sam Howell with the Commanders. He's going to throw for 300 yards, but he's going to put one up to bat as well, and one of these quarterbacks is going to make a mistake in the second half. It's going to cost the game.
Yeah, he's definitely a gunslinger, Tiff. It's funny, too, is when I did the pick, I had talked about the atmosphere there, like as you just mentioned, when Marcel Reed came in and they scored that touchdown off that first turnover, that first touchdown that he was in for, everything flipped. Everything. Because LSU was in complete control.
Yes, they were.
They were quieting the crowd for the most part, and it just flipped everything. So I picked the game as well. Good pick, because I picked it the same as you. Before I was doubted at 7:42, Dylan, this morning. And before I was just...
You really timestamped that?
Disrespected.
Just basically treated like a nobody, which I probably am the most.
Well,
I can't disrespect you again.
Not this room. Mike...
Don't you dare pick... I already did my bad.
He did the same with Dallas, saying that Dallas was going to come in
there. You're going to double my bad?
Play the tape, Dylan!
I like the Niners to win the football game, but I'm going to zig when you zag right here. I actually like the Cowboys to cover the 4.5. I think the Niners win. I think they win by a field goal, but I still think there's some pride on the line for the Cowboys. I agree with you. Things are an absolute mess in Dallas, dude. Like, nothing's going right. But the team's simply too talented to carry on like that. Brock Purdy has played okay, not great, not even really good. He's played okay. I think somebody in the secondary steps up, makes a big pick, and I think that Dallas keeps it tight. So Dallas plus the 4.5 for me.
Well, this is not your job. Get somebody else
to ask you. Please file this in your memory bank as well. When someone says, "I'm a zig," when you zag, they're also going to be your.
I'm just going to tell you, I don't hate that bad pick for me.
Guess what? Trayvon Diggs did step up after the game in the post-game presser and decided to tell someone to get on D's.
I don't hate myself for that pick. I was close.
Let's listen how the right side of that pick sounded. I trust Kyle Shanahan a lot more in a regular season game in October than I do Zimmer. And that's who he's going against. That's the matchup.
Yeah.
So I don't care if he's got guys banged up. The Cowboys are a mess. The head coach is being called out by the owner for the bad play calls. Give me the Niners to cover. 4.5.
When I say bang, bang, I say not again. Bang, bang.
Not again.
What?
Tell you what, you can't get any more genius than that.
I don't feel that bad about that pick. I was close, man. The Cowboys kept it close. They didn't keep it in a field goal close, but it was close.
I just love the fact that you put in there that someone in the secondary is going to step up. And meanwhile, we got reporters calling out Trayvon, rightfully or unrightfully so, which that's a gray area I'm not going to get into because I don't watch Trayvon Diggs enough to know how he plays week in and week out because I don't get to – I cover my team. And if I see effort from somebody, I'm going to talk about that. I don't like calling out effort a lot because it's hard to judge, but at least he stepped up at some point. Maybe wrong week, though. I hope he doesn't coming to this week wanting to – it could work out well for us. Put a little double move on him because he likes to jump routes.
Him and DeRon Blount, Okie doke.
Drawing up plays over there, coach.
We ain't there yet, though. We ain't there yet. Let's celebrate this one.
Yeah, still 24-hour rule. Still 24-hour rule.
You can keep the celebration going because Dave Archer, your former Atlanta Falcons QB and analyst for Atlanta Falcons Radio Network, is joining us here on the show. That's on the other side on the morning shift on Sports Radio 92.9 The Game. We are back here on the morning shift, and we are going straight to the WadeFord.com hotline. That is where we find former Atlanta Falcons quarterback and analyst for Atlanta Falcons Radio Network, Dave Archer, joining us here on the show. How are you feeling, Dave, after the Falcons win now 4-0 in the NFC South?
Yeah, good. Doing good, Tiff. Doing good. Did you get any gambling in when you were out in Vegas?
I did not, but I've been there more times than I can count. Maybe we could do a crowd fund, and you guys could just give me some money the next time I'm sent out there. And
there
I'll just
go.
Give
that
you a cut back. Maybe, you know, only take,
okay,
I don't know, 65%.
Well, definitely don't listen to me in
both sports. Probably you give us some guarantees you're going to win.
Well, I like losing my own money, not somebody else losing it. All right, so I want to get into a lot of things. I know we want to get into a lot of things, but I talked to you earlier this morning, and it was a play that I thought kind of changed the game in a lot of ways. And to me, it's a turnover is when you can – when a team tries to fake a punt on their own side of the 50 and you can you can stop that. What happened on that play? Can you break it down what Kadarrell Hodge did? I know he's normally lined up over the gunner. Walk us through that.
Well, what they did is they reduced that side, meaning they brought the gunner in, if I'm not mistaken, brought the gunner in from that left side, their left side, our right defensively, which immediately, you know, if you don't have a lot of people in the punt block, if you've got 10 people on the line and they reduce and they bring the gunners in, then they're trying to protect to get against a punt being blocked. But if they bring a guy in, that's all of a sudden your ears perk up a little bit. And then Kadarrell, and I talked to him after the game, he just felt like something was kind of fishy going on. So that's kind of a gut feel. Obviously, you study some tape and stuff, and Marquise does a great job of getting those guys in and studying some of the looks that Tampa presents or Dallas this next weekend would present in a punt situation where there might be a fake going on. But I just give him credit for instincts. I give Marquise Williams a ton of credit for having those guys prepared. And then when he saw the look, he didn't wait. He crashed, just came straight in and made the play and just disrupted the blocking. Remember, those guys that are in a punt block situation or in a punt situation, they're covering the kick. They're not, you know, they're blocking to a certain extent. And Mike can tell you it's almost like a pass block. You're losing ground, then they kick it. It's not like they're used to coming off the ball and drive blocking anybody to create running lanes for something. Now, they practice it a little bit, but it's not like something they spend a lot of time on. So Kadarrell blew up the blocking on the play, just decided to give his body up a knife in there and make the play. So a lot of instinct, a lot of prep, certainly, and then maybe some signs that they were going to potentially do something because of what they did with the formation.
Yeah. Also, you know, look, man, either way they blocked it, an incredible play by Kadarrell Hodge, knifing through there. You're right. Good tackle. You know, and he had his spidey senses kind of tingling a little bit, Arch. I love that. But one of the things I want to dive into, Arch, we talked about it throughout the week, that this would be a game that you felt like the Bucs would try to come and run it down your throat. They got five healthy linemen, three running backs that are good players. And throughout the first quarter, they did that. It didn't seem like we could stop them at all. I don't know if it was an adjustment. I know that we kind of went to a bare front at times, Eddie Goldman at the nose and a couple B-gap defenders there in the second quarter. But I'm not sure, and I want to get your opinion, why Tampa steered away from the run. It seemed like they were doing whatever they wanted to on the ground. Then suddenly they stopped giving it a go.
I think there's a pretty good case that they're probably doing the same thing in the meeting rooms this morning, Mike, as to wondering what, you know, with all the success they were having run the football. I think 64 yards rushing in the first quarter. I think they ended up with 74 in the first half and just 18 yards in the second half running the ball. And it wasn't like the game got out of shape. You know, it wasn't like you got way behind. Now, you did get down at 1.14 points, and maybe that shifts gears a little bit in the fourth quarter. But that idea of coming out in the second half and reestablishing yourself in the ground game, I think Atlanta did a few things. They might have tried to run dog a little bit to try to take some things away. But I didn't. When I asked Raheem after the game about that, did you do something different? there was kind of a vague answer. He really just guys competing and stuff like that. So I, to be honest with you, I'm going to have to wait till we do his coaching show this afternoon, and I'll ask him again after he's now had a chance to look at the tape. Did something happen there to where you either took the run away or they got away from the run? We'll find out this afternoon. We talked to Raheem Morris on his coaching show. It comes on, at 6 o'clock tonight during Dukes and Bell. So, but I don't have a great answer for you. I would be in one if I'd been the quarterback, if I'd been Baker Mayfield, I'd have walked over and said, hey, what are we doing? Why are we not running the football? Because they weren't unable to stop it. So maybe a few adjustments, but maybe just Tampa, maybe sticking the chest out and say, hey, we want to throw the ball.
Dave, when it comes to Jesse Bates, and I talk a lot about him just in the sense of, acquiring him in free agency, and he just – it just keeps working out for him, right? Like, he brings so much to this defense, has a forced fumble, a fumble recovery, and an interception. How did he help to kind of set the tone and at least, give the Falcons the chance to win this game?
Yeah, it all starts with him, Tiff, is the way he practices, the way he works. He's not a guy that's playing around or anything like that when they're out there practicing. I'm sure he has his fun, but very serious guy when it comes to getting prepared to play. He's a guy that talks with, the offensive side. He sits down with Kirk and goes over tape. He sits down with some of the younger players on the defense and goes over tape and stuff like that. So it begins with his preparation. And then he's just got a knack for getting to the ball. He's got a great instinct to get to the football. Now, the interception is a spectacular play. He credits Mike Hughes for playing kind of half, playing that half area and then sliding over to help him because he was an invert safety. He had the low safety spot, and they had a corner rotate back. And that actually turned out to be – Jimmy Lake called that twice defensively down near the red zone. Now, his interception was just outside the red zone, but A.J.'s interception was a red zone interception as well. And if you look, the corner rolls from that corner spot or deep third spot and rolls kind of into a half safety spot, and they invert the safety, and the safety kind of takes the corner spot as the flat defender. And AJ read it and came in front and made that diving interception. Well, that's what they had on in this play as well. And a great job by Jesse to lose ground with Hughes kind of playing over the top to kind of disrupt the look a little bit. And then he makes an unbelievable play, makes a circus catch on the interception. So, but his ability to punch the ball out, I compared him to Peanut Tillman. I mean, a guy that I remember back, and Mike, you probably remember back with the Chicago Bears. I mean, the knack for him to be able to get the ball out is incredible. He punches the ball out. He's always doing it. He says he's talking to his teammates all the time. He says, this is what we got to do. You got to punch at the football. You're seeing more and more guys trying to do that when they're coming in on tackles. Obviously, you want to wrap up and put guys on the ground, but if you can get the ball out, obviously that's a difference-making type deal. And for Jesse to make that play, second play of the game, he punches the ball out? I mean, big, big-time play to kind of change and give a different feel to the game right off the start. So he's just a ball hawk and a leader and a guy that prepares as hard as he possibly can.
Yeah, he's got the landmine doing it. When he's not bending his own face mask, he punched the ball out on that fourth down scramble
that was almost huge.
Sneak by Mayfield. Also, Archie, the punt just came back up. They had moved Kadarrell inside, and he did a good job of finding and the vision of the runner. Speaking of just guys that are kind of locked in, though, Kirk Cousins, holy smokes, 65 of 87, 785 yards, 8 touchdowns, and 70, right at 75% completion percentage against Tampa Bay. And I didn't even mention his legs, Arch. How is a guy who isn't known as a mobile quarterback able to just shred a defense that loves to pressure and to disguise their blitzes so well as Todd Bowles is known for?
Well, he's got a great feel for what they're doing, obviously, and he spends a lot of time preparing, just like Jesse does. But this is a team that he got into a zone in two different occasions, right? I asked him about it, just being in a zone and what that's like, and he says, hey, you're seeing things pre-snap. That's something that you think that maybe Todd Bowles' defense is presenting. They're muddy in the water. A lot of guys up in the line of scrimmage. This guy's going to drop. He's got a good read for it. He's got a read whether they're coming. Now, they got to him a couple of times. You remember correctly, they came with a couple of pressures off one edge. In fact, I think they came over Caleb McGarry. They lined up three guys either on his head or outside, and two guys dropped and one guy came. And we didn't block the guy that came and was in the face of Cousins. He had to throw the ball away, but just an excellent feel for what he's seeing. I think he gets more and more comfortable each and every week that he goes into things. I thought it was a nice rebound after last week. I didn't think the team played very well last week. He said that. But he's got a rapport with these wide receivers. The ball's coming out on time. I love some of the early throws he's making. He made a throw to Darnell Mooney on the sideline. I'm telling you, you go back and look at it. He hits Mooney on the sideline right before the end of the first half on a play that's the corner of the safety's playing a half safety, but he's rolling that direction, and the corner's losing ground with Mooney up the field, and he drops a little bench route into Mooney that is as sweet a throw as you'll ever see. I don't care who's throwing it. It was a phenomenal throw. He was just in that zone, and that's fun. I wasn't in that zone very often, but when you get into it, man, that's a fun place to be.
Finishing up with Dave Archer. Dave, I don't want to overreact because the drive didn't land any points because of the missed field goal, but I would argue that the drive they started with 6 minutes and some change left in the game and taking all the way down to the one-minute mark that ended in the missed field goal was one of the most important drives of the season so far, I think, for the Atlanta Falcons. Not only did you get the rare Charlie Warner catch, you got the Kirk Cousins scramble and the Kirk Cousins QB sneak right there in the middle of that drive. I thought it was excellent. I want to know what you saw in that drive that kind of allowed them to put away a number of minutes off the clock.
Yeah, Mike, to be specific, I'm looking at my notes right here. We took over with 6:52 left, so almost 7 minutes left in the game, and you went on this drive. Remember, you overcame the face mask penalty on Neusel, which made it, first and 22, first and 23? And so you overcame a major penalty in that drive as well. Of course, you talked about the Cousins run for 13 yards, and then on fourth down, they do the little tush push and shoving for a first down. Killed all their timeouts, I think, in the drive as well, and they got the ball back with under a minute. It was a defining drive in the game. Now it would have been finished if we'd seen Youngway knock it through, right, and then you'd made it an 8-point lead. But ultimately, those are the kind of drives that are hard to go on. You know as well as I do, Mike, when people know that you're trying to kill the clock and they're ganging up against the run and you're still able to crease them or make some plays or be willing to throw the football. Remember, after they got first and 22 after the face mask, Zach Robinson stayed aggressive. He threw the football out to the outside to Drake London. London got about 8 or 9 of the 22 back on that first play. And so I thought that the aggressive play call to kind of keep them in the game, not start looking at the clock too early, and then once they got inside 4 minutes, then really Kirk really started to bleed the clock pretty hard. And then, of course, his run was a pivotal play. But I agree with you. I think that was a defining moment in the game. Showed a lot of backbone from that offense. You knew the defense had been on the field a great deal, and they did a great job of sealing the game there, no question. Mm.
Falcons in the driver's seat in the NFC South at 4-0. Dave, thank you so much for joining us this morning.
Thanks, guys. Appreciate y'all.
That was Dave Archer, former Atlanta Falcons QB and analyst for the Atlanta Falcons Radio Network, joining us. You can follow him at ArcherQB16. On X. This hour brought to you by Mark Spain Real Estate. Go to markspain.com to get a guaranteed offer on your home today and start packing. We've got a Life of Squid.
Yep.
Up next.
I got a new favorite offensive lineman.
Oh.
Sure ain't the guy sitting in here.
Oh.
Next. Morning Shift Sports Radio 92.9 The Game and
The Odyssey app.
That's right. I like how that lady says Squid Billy. Kind of makes me laugh in the imaging. That's right. W sauce, breakfast sauce, Bloody Mary. Mix Key West style. And my friends at New Realm, Owl Inn. You can get it at Twin Peaks, by the way. So next time you go see both Twin Peaks, next time you go Kennesaw and Buckhead. So next time you go down and see Dukes and Bell or Andy and Randy, or just go to Twin Peaks in general.
I was going
to
say, don't twist my arm. Love Twin Peaks.
You can go get the Owl Inn lager right there. That's right, Dylan. All right.
Was that a drop or was that Dylan?
That was Dylan.
That was me. Alive and in the flesh.
You better be careful. Your West Georgia car be taken away.
I mean,
I'm not going to take it away, but, you know, somebody else might.
Do people even consider West Georgia like a real, like...
Whoa. Hold on now. We are D1 now, I will let you know, Miss Blackman.
Don't
disrespect the West Georgia name.
All right, well, I'm not going to let Georgia State and West Georgia squabble during a Kennesaw State segment in my segment. All right, so y'all just... You know, I am a loyal person, I like to think. If you come at me or one of mine, I'll choose violence quickly. And I'm not afraid of that. And yesterday, a dirty saint decided to choose violence against Justin Herbert. And he was really just, it was just a dirty play. Nathan Shepard has him in his grasp and around his ankle, and he keeps kind of rolling with his ankle. Some would call it kind of like a gator roll.
Yeah.
Because it's a lot like how gators, when they get you in the water,
yeah,
tip.
Yeah, it's a death roll.
That's right. Look at you. You've watched National Geographic before. I bet you watch. I bet Swamp People was your favorite show where they killed the gators.
No.
Yeah, well, yeah, the gators need to be killed. You have to eat them.
Shoot them. Shoot them.
Horrible. That
my boy Troy, shoot. You got to shoot. Shoot. Anyways, Justin Herbert, Nathan Shepard get tangled up. And here's how it sounded when Bradley Bozeman came to the aid of his QB.
And then watch. Yeah, I don't. What are you doing there? Oh,
yeah, and you saw it.
Yeah, you see Bradley Bozeman. Heck no, man. Those offensive linemen treat the quarterback like King Arthur, and they're the knights of his court. You know what I mean?
Well said. Is that Mark Sanchez? Well said, Mark.
I don't know. He sounded more like Bobby Carpenter than Mark Sanchez. But I know Bobby Carpenter doesn't do NFL games.
Barbie Carpenter.
Can I, as an offensive lineman, before we get to Bradley's take on this play, when you watched that video, did it make you feel a certain way?
Did it unearth some certain emotions? Absolutely.
Could you stand up?
I can't.
In public?
One of my college quarterbacks was John Parker Wilson. I was in his wedding. I gave a speech at his wedding about this. I was like, you know what, man? I've had this guy's back for a long time. So, yeah, man. It was, yeah. I'm ready to go to war with anybody who has those kind of emotions. Yeah.
I probably watched this tiff on the plane with Wes and Arch, and then before I watched it on the bus, and then we watched it together. I probably watched it 35 times yesterday, just because it was like a bear in the wild that saw his cub in danger.
You mean her cub?
Yeah, whatever. Him, her. I mean, I didn't think it mattered, but there's Papa Bears too, you know. But I thought it was amazing. I just loved it. Here's what Bradley Bozeman said about the play in the postgame.
Yeah, you know, it was probably one of the dirtier plays I've ever seen, you know, especially with my own eyes. To, you know, think the ball's gone 2-3 seconds and he's still getting rolling. He's on the ground. He's still getting rolling. And, you know, just protect your quarterback. You protect your quarterback no matter what. I think any of the offensive linemen that was in that position would have done the exact same thing. So, you know, had to get him off of him, and we did.
Can anybody guess where that young man went to college at? I bet you can't guess. The University of Alabama. You can hear it in his voice right there. It's probably one of the dirtier plays I've ever seen.
Yeah, Carl Dukes always put a lot of emphasis on the Alabama.
It's the old Forrest Gump.
You know, that is exactly – that's why I used to love – Joe Hawley used to do this at the end of plays, where when the guy was making tackles, you see Joe Hawley.
Smoking Joe.
He would come in and clear the pile because he would just hit the pile out of nowhere. And it was something that Harvey Dahl did.
Harvey
too.
Dahl, man.
Harvey Dahl.
Paul Boudreau used to love that.
Yeah.
Golly.
I loved it too. It's why Joe Hawley, I mean.
Careful.
I don't want to hurt anybody's feelings in
Joe's
this room.
Joe's my guy too.
But it was why Joe Hawley was
my officiant at my wedding.
It was why Joe Hawley was my favorite player on the Falcons offensive line when he played here, because when he played, he would be the guy running down the field at the end, and he would get off my guy. And I loved that. I just love – there's something about taking up for your own. And, I have a mad respect. Bradley Bozeman, a ton of respect.
Yeah, shout out to Joe Hawley, man. He's living somewhere just off the grid out in the middle of Texas. He's just like, you know what? Cut all ties. I'm out.
I hope he at least has the Odyssey app on.
This hour brought to you by Mark Spain Real Estate. Go to markspain.com to get a guaranteed offer on your home today and start packing. We'll find out what's coming up on the Steakhouse next on the Morning Shift on Sports Radio 92.9 The Game.